Good morning. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're talking about
overpowered PC talents.
Overpowered PC talents.
Or skills. Or what is it? The feats.
Okay.
All kinds of things that could make a character overpowered.
And this would cause problems for...
Well, let's start off at the beginning. So sometimes rules are written and they can be very vague.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when a player interprets or reads it, they are going to read it in a way that would bring as much positive situations for their character, where the GM might say, oh, that's pretty interesting. I don't see, it seems pretty harmless, that skill or that ability or whatever it is. Rules sometimes, you know, the rules are not, either they're not edited well or it's not fully play tested or the situation doesn't come up. But then when general population has at the rules and the abilities and all the skills and all the situations, there's a broken rule, they call it, right? Because it's a broken talent and
there's someone that finds it.
There's always somebody that finds it, a player especially. And before it gets ixnayed by the general population or the rule creators or the publishers or the author of that book, these players are out there
running amok,
exploiting the rule to the hilt. Now, as long as nobody is in the party cares, it doesn't really matter. But sometimes when a player really finds a really good exploit and they use it all the time, they could take the spotlight away from other players. They can become the player, the character that
does everything,
right? Because they could solve it because of this exploit, which basically, to me, an exploit is when its intended use or the way it's used is not the way it's supposed to work, or it just solves everything no matter what kind of problem it is, right?
So I understand what you're saying. And when I was researching this, I found this funny story that I have to tell you.
Okay.
This guy wrote into somewhere, I don't remember where, but he says that he's running a new 5e D&D campaign.
Okay.
And one of his players, he goes, I don't know how to handle this person because he brings me his character and he has a 25 strength and all 18s and 19s and all of the other stats. And they're only first level characters. So he's going, what am I supposed to do with someone this strong? And so I read and all these GMs are telling him stuff.
Advice.
And all of them say, he rolled up the character wrong. He looked at the rule that said you roll four dice and you're only supposed to take three dice. He obviously took four because you can't start out with a 25 strength.
Yeah, that's pretty high, yes.
And so I thought it was funny because you were talking about how some players are overpowered in certain things. And this guy was overpowered in everything because 18 and 19s are like you're supposed to be. And 18 is supposed to be the highest one you
right.
could possibly start out with.
Yes.
And even if you add in like elf stuff, you usually at first level, you don't start out with anything higher than that.
Well, there's always those
you
modifiers,
might be able to
right?
be a 20 or something.
I don't know if 5th edition did away with racial modifiers.
Yeah, the racial modifiers, that's what I'm talking
about. They're still
there? Yeah.
I know they're getting rid of them.
Yeah.
But they added racial modifiers. Oh, they still had racial modifiers like or half orcs get +2 in strength but -2 in wisdom or something like that.
Well, this story told me two things.
Yes.
Session zero is important so everybody knows how to make their character because right. especially if they're new players – because they obviously read the rules wrong, rolled the four dice and go, oh, I have a 25.
Wow, yeah, cool.
That's amazing. Although I don't even know how he could get that. But anyway, I guess.
Well, on four dice, six dice, you could get 24, but then you get one
for
plus
modifier.
One modifier, right?
So,
I think humans get plus
so these
one.
Other, these other, so the, all the GMs are like, he did it wrong.
Yeah,
you need ultimately. Him to redo his character.
Yeah, explain how the character crosses works. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, sometimes an exploit could be a misreading of the rules.
Right, exactly.
Right. And I've
or
had that
misinterpretation
happen.
Of the rules.
Or misreading. Yeah, versus interpreting, misreading. Like, or you forgot to, it says.
The,
sometimes
you forgot to turn the page.
Or you forgot, like, you looked over the word in these situations or in this situation only. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not in every situation.
Only against orcs or only against your favored enemy.
Only when you're in water, right? And stuff like that. That does happen when people misread the rules in this case.
Yes.
And you have a super awesome first level character.
And which you're going to be very disappointed because there's going to be someone at that table going, no.
Get out of here with that guy. Get out of here with that
You did that wrong.
Well, you're right. And I think that does happen. And it can happen. And it has happened, obviously. So there are some times when the rules are vague or they're written badly or they're not play tested. I forget what there was a spell in AD&D, I'm pretty sure, but I remember Chris hated it because he's like, "Oh, that's a broken spell." I forget rope trick or not. It wasn't rope trick. It was something else, but it was something strange, right? It was a strange spell, and so he explained it, and I'm like, "Okay, I could see how you could say it's broken because broken
right.
can be used," and I'm like, "Okay, I understand that," and then he goes, "Oh, there's a big list of broken spells." I'm like, "Really?" And I had never heard of it, and he's a little bit more mini-maximizer type of player than I was. I thought it was fascinating that did happen, right? Because I always took the idea that a book that's published would be very well looked at and play tested and stuff, and sometimes it doesn't happen, right? Even edited books, right?
Well, most of them are edited.
But... I mean, all edited books, but even they make mistakes, right? So weird stuff gets printed.
Well, and not only that, but I'm thinking when it's a role-playing game, the editor may or may not know what they're reading. You know what I mean? Well, editors read the books to check for grammar and that it makes sense.
Right.
But if it's like a rules thing, you would probably need a special editor to...
I'm pretty sure nowadays...
Well, now, yeah.
I think nowadays editors are very... especially there's role-playing editors
right,
out there.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Who know what role-playing is.
I'm just saying before, like if you took it to a regular editor...
Oh, sure,
editor,
yes. But, like, I'm just making sure the grammar's good. I have no idea what's going on here.
But then if it's your book and you're editing it or someone who helped you write it is editing it, it may not be edited as well, right? Because you know what you meant to say, whether it's actually there or not.
We've talked about stuff like that. I don't know about even online, but I know we talked about editing when we were back in school. And when I was back in school, I don't know about you, but when I was back in school, I would write papers or essays and stuff, and I would reread them. I'm like, man, this is a good essay. And then, unfortunately, if I actually turn it in, it's like all these red marks. I'm like, holy crap. How could I not remember to put the in between here because it doesn't make any sense? Or omitting words, right? And we learned that when you edit your own stuff, because you know what you're trying to say, you will insert words that aren't physically on the paper.
Yes. Well, when I did my thesis for my master's degree, I had you looking at it, but you kept falling asleep while you were reading it. So I said, this is not going to work for me. So I gave it to my brother, and he was a hard editor. He's like, no, this is wrong. And he came back with, there was so much stuff in red on my paper. I was like, oh my God, I'm a horrible writer. He goes, no, you just want it to be perfect. And I think when I turned it in, there were like 8 mistakes, and they were like where I hadn't double spaced in between the sentences and different things like that. You had to add different things.
Because it's Peruvian style, right?
Yeah, whatever style it was, but he's really good at that kind of stuff. So you've got it, my brother. Oh. So you have to find someone who can look at it and go objectively without having any kind of they kind of know what you want to say, but they're really looking at how it's put together. So I can see that for rules, you need someone who has a good eye, who is not invested in what you're trying to say, or knows what you're trying to say, but can really put it the way that it's supposed to be said to make it
right.
better.
Maybe not understand exactly what you're doing, but understands how rules work.
Yeah.
Right. And how they have to make sense. And
especially role-playing game rules, because if the rules are written badly, it's really hard to figure out what you're supposed to be doing.
So that could cause confusion, right?
Yes.
If you're writing, talents, skills, feats, all these things that player characters can do, and you miss a word here and there, and people read it and they're like, wow, this is really cool, right? You could really, I could really do some damage with this weapon. Or
that's
I could
why you have playtesting before you publish stuff.
Yeah, right? And you could, yes. And you could tell some games that have really been playtested because they have hardly any kind of mistakes. And then there's a other, on the other side, like, for example, years ago, there was a Lord of the Rings game called By Decipher. And they really rushed the game to be published because they wanted it to be published the same year as the movies came out.
Uh-huh.
The first movie came out. And it was really tied with that movie, right? It had pictures of the actors or the scenes in the movie and stuff. But it was terrible. I mean, it would refer to tables that weren't...
It was too rushed.
It was way too rushed. It would refer to tables that didn't exist. It would... The paragraph would go and it would just end. And like, what happened? It was like half the paragraph was missing when it went to the other page. It was really bad. And
so that's an example of what not to do.
What not to do, but in the media, in the middle, there might be some, you know, things get past the editor, get past the playtesting, and into the really published book.
And not only that, even if it's written well, sometimes players interpret it differently than other people, right?
Yeah, yeah. And players have this. Some players have a knack to really exploit the rules.
Yeah.
Right. We talked about our son and his friends who were mini maximizers in Shadowrun and D&D, and how they were outplaying Kathy, our friend, and she was having a tough time keeping up with the other players, her sons and her husband, because they were mini maximizers and really exploiting the rules as much as possible, where she wasn't as competent with the rules and just wasn't being able to keep up in combat anyway with the rest of the group. So when you have that level of...
There's different levels in your playing group of how people are looking at the rules and who's the mini maxer and who's in it for just to have fun and that kind of... I mean, right. Everyone's in it to have fun, but, you know... People have different personalities.
Right. When you have a certain group of players that are really into reading the skills and picking things that are really going to help them out, and because they're looking for that maximum punch, they can sometimes misinterpret the rules or interpret them in a very, very positive light. They were talking about, this group was talking about a Call of Cthulhu game that they were in and how one person had this ability of clairvoyance. How they could tell what had happened in a room or in the past or something like that, right? So Call of Cthulhu is an investigative game. So theoretically, they go, well, we could just put her, you know, just put her like on a stick in front of us and like, you know, she could tell us what's going on, right? And the mystery's gone, right? So how do you combat that, right? So the GM, I believe, started having, well, you just don't automatically
get
see
it.
Everything,
yeah, yeah.
And find the clues and all this other stuff. So he would have her have some sort of consequences for clairvoyance. Like she would start nose bleeding and then she would have headaches. And if she continued to use it, she would have to roll her sanity, which is always dangerous in Call of Cthulhu. So then there was consequences for her being able to use the skill instead of just letting her do it ad hoc anytime she went to the room. Oh, the murderer was here. This is who did it. And we got to go after him now. And that was it, you know, that kind of thing. And
that's going to be a short game.
That's going to be a short investigative game. There was a... But see, I think they were reading that there was in that same podcast, I think there was a... I forget who it was, but they were talking about how he was reading the rule in Star Trek Adventures on how he could use science for anything because he could claim that he read a book. That was a talent or special ability or whatever. And he could use science. Is anything else, any other numbers, even if it was like not within science, but you could read a book. I read a book and he could use a science trait. And if you're a scientist, then you would have a high ability in that thing and you would spend momentum, right, and to be able to do that. And then what he failed to say, well, I spend momentum, but if I keep getting momentum, I could keep doing it over and over and over again, and
as many times as he wanted.
Yeah, right, as long as he paid the momentum. But failed to read is that the next time he used it in a turn or back to back, he would have to pay one more momentum. So at one point it would be too much momentum. You could probably do it like that's a lot of momentum, but you would pay one, then you would pay two, then you would pay three.
And there's usually not that much momentum.
And there's usually not that much momentum. Even if you're generating one momentum at a time,
yeah,
usually you can't. And then there's a maximum of, I think the maximum you could probably have is five dice in the momentum pool. After that, if you use all those up, then you know, the sixth time you do it straight, you wouldn't be able to do it. So it did seem sound kind of broken, but then again, the way he interpreted it, he forgot to realize that you added the cost would increase as you kept doing this trick or use this ability. So, but let's say he read it right, and it was kind of broken, the ability or the special trait or the spell or whatever player is using. What do you do?
I don't know that he even read it right because
he didn't. The way he read it, because he read it the whole thing, but then when the person was saying you have to pay one more momentum, increases one momentum every time you use it in a row, then you wouldn't be able to afford it after a while.
Not only that, the other players would be going, excuse me, but don't use all the momentum. I might need some of that.
I might even need momentum to
live. And I think the GM at some point would go, okay, if you're going to use that more than once, I'm going to get I don't know what they call it in Star Trek Adventures, but like I'm going to get a doom and I get to use it against you, that kind of thing.
So there's that mechanic that where the GM could interfere in the workings of the players. You're right. So, but let's say it was all within the rules, or it was the rules stated something and it was not perfectly fine, but.
Well, then at the table, the GM's going to make a special rule for that.
That's one thing you could do is a special rule. I think, for example, they were talking about this one person was a shapeshifter.
Uh-huh.
And then this other player told him, oh, you can turn into mist and go into the person's lungs and then explode in a different form. So he did it. And then the GM goes, that was a really cool trick. He goes, that's the last time I'll let you do that, though. So obviously GMs have the ability and the power to say, you know what? That is way ridiculously overpowered, right?
Right.
And another game, somebody was talking about a flamethrower. He had a flamethrower and he was able to kill all the zombies with the flamethrower. And they go, well, that's kind of overpowered. So what they did is they only allowed him to carry so much fuel for the flamethrower. So you can mitigate down the effectiveness of this thing that you're using perfectly legally or the way that's written, but it's still overpowered.
And you got to take into consideration if a player has something that's really overpowered, how is it going to affect the other players in the game, right? Is everybody just going to sit back and let that person do all the whatever, all the fighting, all the investigating, and they're just there to watch the show? That's not going to be so much fun for the rest of the players playing the game.
Right. And in another situation, I think somebody had a super talented, but a very high level paladin, and because they were up against certain types of creatures, I don't know if they were in the hells or something like that, but where the paladin was like able to really do extra damage because of the creature types and stuff.
Yeah,
they just send the paladin first, and they just kind of hung back, and just in case she got hurt or something. So they go, yeah, and then one player goes, yeah, when we figured out what it was she was fighting, I go, I just went around and did some other stuff because I knew she had it handled.
I didn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but she goes, I was having a great time, right? And so because she was like...
Because you're ruining it for me.
Because she was like, you know, in the spotlight, and she goes, and she felt that for once, she was that...
She that, got to do that something that other people couldn't
right?
do, right?
And she wasn't a mini maximizer, but there's people in her group that are mini maximizers who have that... that spotlight,
right.
That type of spotlight right. all the time where they're like doing all the damage. And she goes, here I am, you know, fighting demons with my, you know, whatever sword she had and just knocking them left and right. And she felt like, super powerful and super excited. And I could see that, right? But you don't want that over and over again.
Right.
You don't want that same character to be hogging up the spotlight or instant solving the puzzles or the mysteries and stuff. So what do you do? So the GM rightfully can say, hey, you know what? That's
a little too overpowered. I'm not sure. Let's read the rules together and see.
And then figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Kind of like when I do with the Trident. When the boys told her how she could really exploit this thing, I said, okay, let's
back this up, people.
Back up the Trident truck and let's see what we can do to make it less overpowered. And I did that. And I don't think Kathy really cared. I think
she just wanted to be in the game with the boys. Because when you're playing with the mini maxers or people who have really got their characters the way they want them, and they do like 60 points of damage, and you're doing 2d6s with your sword or whatever, you're like
plus two because it's magical.
Excuse me, I don't understand.
I mean, she even had like not a flaming sword, but she had like a pretty badass sword, and it still wasn't. I mean, she was still getting frustrated.
Barbarians and monks and the little rogue backstabbers guys that have mini maxed out, they know what they're doing, and you're going, well, I just want to do this. But then you realize that it doesn't do as much damage as they do.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times people feel bad about that, right? Because
of course you want to be
pulling your weight in the group.
Definitely. The GM obviously has the right to say, you know what? I think that might be more overpowered, you know, taking the spotlight from other. And it doesn't have to happen at the game table. It could be an email. Could be after the game, talking to the person. Just approach them and say, I think this is very unfair for the other players, and it's unfair to me because you are really like way up here dealing damage or doing something while the other players are not even like on par with you, right?
And I think also the GM can also, besides that part of it, they can make put the players into situations where each other person could take a turn at something that they're good at, figure out what they do really well,
right?
And make sure that everybody gets their chance to, as you say, be in the spotlight, right? To be the one who's doing making the big move.
Right. So also, as a player, if you realize this is happening, you should step up and say, you know what?
Yeah.
And work with the GM. I like this ability, but I think it might be too much.
And we've never really had that problem at our table, because if one of the boys or even someone thinks that, I don't think you're doing that right, because that's way too powerful, they'll say it at the table, right? And then everybody gets involved. They're looking it up to see if you read the rule wrong or how you can actually do it. And I think that's a good way to do it, because you're not going, well, you can't do that. You're going, I'm not sure that you did that the right way. But let's figure out what's going on.
Well, teenage boys aren't usually known for their tact.
Which is a good thing when it comes to working out the rules,
the kinks,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple of times, like, somebody did something, and they're like,
I don't think you can do that.
How did you do that? Right away.
To each other, right?
Yes.
You did that wrong.
Or how did you get to that?
Let me see. Show me the numbers.
So what are you doing exactly? Let's look at it. And then they look it up. I'm like,
oh. And then they all look it up, and they're all reading it, and they go, oh, yeah. No, I did that wrong. And then they redo it. I'm taking that back. Let's try again.
Which is funny, because I never really got involved in that.
That had a lot to do with Shadowrun, though, right?
Shadowrun, even D&D.
Yeah.
D&D, when somebody would go, what? How did you get that? How much damage did you do? How did you get that much damage done? And they would go
and then if it was right, they would go, wow, you did that. You really picked those what you were gonna do well. I'm like, going, you guys are little mini maximizers.
Yes. But I think that's a pretty cool way if the table is very
if you know everybody, right, and you're basically family or friends, that's a good way. And I think all of the games we play, like with the Friday night group, and even with the Stanford group, as you people like to call it, there all of the people are really into reading the rules.
Yes,
and for those of us who aren't so much, we learn what we do and not what everybody else does. It makes it interesting to see all these people interact, and they figure out if it's being done right or not, which is an important part of the game, right? Because you don't want someone to be overpowered and
taking over the game.
And then figure out later, oh, well, they did it wrong, right? Or not that you can do it wrong, but they didn't do it according to the rule.
Right, right. And I think what luckily for us is that we are all pretty comfortable with each other, right? And can tell each other, I don't think that's right. Or say, what gives you that ability, or how did you get to that number? And people are like, well, you know, they're not going to instantly get offended going, you think I'm cheating? I go, no, I just want to know. And I think that's basically what the group does, is self, what do you call it?
Self-patrol.
Self-police yourself. And it works out well, because there's hardly been a time, except me with a couple of times, when I say, how did you get to that astronomical freaking damage? And then it would like tell me, and I'm like, oh, okay, okay. And it was indeed a very mini maximized event, or how they got to there. And I'm like, oh yeah, but it's all within the rules. And I'm like, okay. And it wasn't a big deal, but sometimes they would really throw curveballs at me, and I'm like, I didn't understand how they got to those numbers. And I'm like,
Show me the math.
Obviously, I don't pay attention enough to this game, or haven't read the rules to that
extent. I didn't look at your character well enough.
That's another thing that can happen, is that if you are the GM and you are running a game, it's very critical
to know what the characters are.
And I know I'm terrible at it, because we don't usually have a session zero. Everybody makes the characters on their own, and I should really take a look at the characters and in depth see what they can and can't do. And I think every GM should do that, just to make sure
that they didn't read it wrong and they're using all four dice instead of just the three dice when they're rolling up their character. That kind of thing, right?
Well, there's that, but also you get a lot of clues as to what kind of stuff they're interested in, and keep them entertained.
And I think the more you play and the more games you play, different kinds of games, especially if they're new games, when everybody wants to figure out the rules, having a group where everybody's like, oh, that's not the way I understood it, or let's see how combat works, and they open up their books and they each read different things and figure out how things go, right?
Right. I think because we do play a lot of different games and are trying to get some of these games played on our shelves, we aren't experts in the rules, right? And so we do have that group conversation as to, oh, well, how does this work, right? And we all look at the rules and we all figure out what the rules say and try to interpret what the rules do.
And which is part of the game, right? Yeah. Learning how to play it, learning the rules.
Yeah, because we don't usually read all the rules and become experts in the game and then play. We start playing right away, and then we kind of learn as we progress through the adventures and stuff, and certain things come up that hadn't come up before. We're like, oh, how do you handle ghosts, or how do you handle iron weapons, if it means anything at all? So I think that is definitely a good way to handle or to deal with weird rules that may be broken. As long as everybody interprets it the same, okay, we interpret the same, and then go from there.
And if they don't interpret it the same, you can come to a middle ground.
Have a discussion about it. Like, well, what makes you think that's what it says? And then they'll read it, and I'm like, oh, I could see that, or whatever. And that does happen. I mean, it has happened in our group where, like, oh, no, I don't think that's what it means, especially when we're playing the One Ring. I mean, we're playing all kinds of different games. What was that? What was the last game we're playing? Dragonbane. And though that one's pretty straightforward as far as the rules.
It's very deadly, those rules.
It's also like, yeah, right, this is pretty deadly. But it's also very, has some very interesting rules that aren't like anything in D&D. Mm-hmm. And you're right. And the fact that it's a very deadly game, it can be very deadly because characters don't have a lot of hit points compared to D&D characters. But because the rules are written the way they're written, you can do a lot of damage in one strike.
Yeah.
If you get really lucky.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool, but also not very cool when this happens to you. Like me, I missed a roll or something. Or no, I didn't even have a choice. It rolled really well. It rolled on the table, and I got swallowed by the dragon thing. And that was it. There was no roll. I couldn't do a saving throw. No. No, it happens. I go, oh.
You couldn't dodge it?
I couldn't dodge it.
There was no dodge.
There was no, so.
But you still lived. You had to fight from the inside.
Yes, I had to cut my way out. So that was pretty cool. I mean, so obviously the rules of that game, that encounter were written for you to be able to survive, even if you got swallowed.
Right.
Other games,
if you get swallowed by a sea monster, that's it.
That's it. Or it's so tough to try to get you out that you'll die before.
Yeah.
You can be rescued.
Well, usually when your friend gets swallowed by a sea monster, you're pretty sure they're dead anyway. So rescue may not be the best thing.
Recover the body as whole as possible. So I think anytime you feel or as a player that you might be overpowered or abusing a talent or a special ability, you should look at the table, right? And if everybody's like tuning out or
on their phones
and it just or look grumpy or don't look like they're having fun, you know, reevaluate what you're doing. Have a chat with the GM. The same is true for the GM. If you see that happening and the player just rocking the freaking session after every session, having the spotlight, and other players are like, okay, and they feel maybe you feel like they're playing second fiddle or whatever you want to call it, not having fun, then I think you have to have a talk with that player and say, you know what, I think maybe we have to come to an understanding about that ability or that rule, or you yourself can do some research and look at that rule and say, oh, I think that player's using it wrong. Let's have a discussion about it. And
I think for the most part that if you're playing with a group of players who aren't just, if you're not all strangers. New.
Oh, new.
Well, even if you're strangers, I think that someone at the table is going to go, I'm not sure that you're doing that right. Because just from my personal experience, most gamers look at the things and they go, they may not have read all the rules, but they can tell when they think someone has read it wrong.
Yeah, sometimes we're not very shy people at the table.
Which is a good thing, because then that person learns whether they read it right or not, and if they're doing it wrong, then they can fix it so they're doing it right. Also, they realize that, oh, maybe I shouldn't be hogging all of the time at the table.
Yes. So ultimately, the thing is that you're supposed to be having fun. And if you repeatedly using this ability or action is causing people not to have fun and they don't say anything, it should be up to you to say, you know what,
yeah,
maybe I should tone down this thing or relook at it and talk to GM about how we can tone it down or change it so it doesn't have this
massive
fun-killing effect on your party. But you're right, Jolene. A lot of people would say, oh, I think you probably read that ability wrong, and then it'll go
for all the people I know anyway. Then they would explain it to me.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't happen in our group, in any of our groups, the three groups that we play in, because we have people who are very rule-orientated, right?
Yeah.
They're rule sticklers. You know, our son and the kids in our family game, Morgan and Bay, because they read rules and like,
right.
And they're pretty good at reading and understanding. I'm pretty sure that's not the way it's supposed to work. And then there's the other group where like, well, we don't know. Let's look it up. Because somebody will say, well, how the hell did you get that? Or what, is that how it works? And then we're like, well, we don't know.
Let's go and look at it. I might have read it wrong.
Yeah. Usually it doesn't happen, but it can happen in certain groups, in certain type of groups where people may not know each other very well or not as comfortable with each other as people who have been playing together for years and years.
But it's always okay to ask questions, right?
Yes.
It just don't say it like, you're doing that wrong.
You're cheating.
Then that might, you know, put them on the defensive versus,
a little bit.
I'm sorry, can you show me how you did that? Because that's really cool and I want to know what's going on.
Right, right, right.
Where was that? Can I read that? So there you go. If if you're ever in a game and you're overpowered or other people are overpowered and you can tell people aren't having fun, think about what's going on. Try to figure it out.
And ask questions. It doesn't hurt. I go, huh, how did you get to that? Oh, how did you get to that number? Or what ability is that? And then everybody can read it and say, oh, yeah. Or say, no, I think you got that wrong. Usually it's something like that. I mean, like I said, most books these days that come out, the rules are pretty well written. They're pretty well edited, and they're pretty much play tested. But sometimes smaller publications may not have that ability.
There you go. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene.
And you have a good day.